Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk, and maybe after all that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something's coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting your time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. Or download the app from the Apple app or Google Play stores.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
There's a little tiny something in the back of your mind that stops you being really bold, really confident, and just coming out and making it. I suspect if Red Bull were in the situation McLaren were in, we'll never know, but I suspect Red Bull would have made a different call.
Hello and welcome to the James Allen on F1 podcast brought to you by Autosport. It's crunch time in Abu Dhabi with a three-way fight for the F1 World Championship. From McLaren's point of view, it didn't have to be this way. If they'd avoided disqualification in Vegas or just avoided making a strategy blunder on both cars in Qatar last weekend, they would be guaranteed their first world champion driver since Lewis Hamilton in 2008. Instead, Lando Norris will be champion if he finishes third or higher, but Max Verstappen is only 12 points behind him and has his own chances, while Oscar Piastri needs luck to go his way after a crushing disappointment in Qatar. So we're going to go into all of this and also what it's like to be in the middle of a title showdown with someone who is at the heart of it all with McLaren back in 2007 and 2008. 2007, of course, when McLaren lost the championship from a position not unlike the current one today, with two drivers leading the way and a third driver challenging. So welcome back to former mechanic, now journalist and broadcaster, Mark Priestley.
Thanks, James. Nice to be here again.
You couldn't be more timely, Mark, to have you with us with your experience. And joining us from Abu Dhabi is our F1 writer, Ronald Vording. How are you doing, Ronald? Good weekend in Qatar?
Yeah, good weekend. I just had a flight from Qatar to Dubai yesterday. So now, yeah, as we record, we will have the Red Bull announcement shortly, so we will not be recharging fully, but hopefully 2 days of recharging at least a little bit, and then back again at the track at Thursday. So yeah, looking forward to a showdown in Abu Dhabi.
Well, let's have a word about that Red Bull announcement a little bit later on, but first we have to focus on the here and now. Mark, it has not been a good week for your old team, McLaren. Do you think that the disqualification in Vegas knocked the team's confidence and that contributed to another error in Qatar?
I mean, I don't know. I think if you look back in this season, that's not, you know, they're not the only two sort of errors or oversights that the team have made, if we're really honest about it. You know, if I think about the season as a whole, McLaren delivered an unbelievably good car, a car that's been, you know, utterly dominant, better than the Red Bull on most occasions this year. But operationally, I don't think they've been perfect. I think we can all say they haven't been perfect. They've made some errors. They've got some judgment calls wrong. And you know, it happens to all of us. But probably over the season, if you think about Red Bull as a team and Max as a driver, they've made far less mistakes. They didn't come up with as good a car, but they've operationally probably been a bit stronger. So you build confidence by doing good things repeatedly. You build confidence by operating at a high level. Red Bull have been building that continuously, digging results out of nowhere at times. McLaren have been the favourites all season. And the more of these little errors and little situations that don't go your way creep in, the more it knocks your confidence. And when your confidence is knocked and you've got to make a big call, like they had to make the one in Qatar at the weekend, there's a little tiny something in the back of your mind that stops you being really bold, really confident, and just coming out and making it. I suspect if Red Bull were in the situation McLaren were in, we'll never know, but I suspect Red Bull would have made a different call.
Yeah, and Ronald, I mean, Mark makes a good point there about Red Bull, because they weren't doing brilliantly prior to the British Grand Prix and then the ousting of Christian Horner. But then pretty much straight away, they installed Laurent Mekies. He banged some heads together in the engineering department because he is an engineer himself, got everybody kind of working and heading in the same direction. And since then, Verstappen's, you know, had 5 wins. And if you look at the points of the first 13 rounds compared to the points since, I mean, it's night and day, isn't it? So they seem to have really coalesced since that period in July when they had that change of leadership.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I had a roundtable interview with Laurent Mekies in Qatar, and he still repeated, "My contribution is absolutely zero." I put those words to Helmut Marko, and he said, "Well, complete rubbish." He shared a nice anecdote that he addressed the factory when Laurent Mekies took over. And back then, Helmut Marko told all the Red Bull staff members that basically he still believed in the title fight. He still believed in Max Verstappen's championship chances. And Helmut laughed. He said, "Back then, I was the only one. No one else believed that a turnaround like this would be possible." Usually, Helmut Marko is quite good in betting significant sums of money in such a case. So maybe he's done the same again. But anyway, he was the only one to believe it. But now, like, the morale in the team and the mindset changed completely. As Max Verstappen said, they are like all in. And you're right. I think Laurent Mekies has played a significant role in that. I think the most important bit is translating the driver feedback to the engineers. And with his background, he's been much more able to do that than, with all respect, of course, Christian Horner, who has, a phenomenal track record, completely different qualities. But maybe you need the engineering knowledge at the very top in modern F1. We see that more and more. Laurent, I think, has been a crucial element. And also important to mention, it's not only for 2025, because this gives Red Bull more confidence for 2026 as well. That was an important topic when talking to Laurent Mekies. He said, "Yes, of course, we want to win the title. But without everything we've done in the last couple of months, we would have gone into the winter and into 2026 completely blind and basically hoping that we could come up with a good car in 26 under the new regulations." So they have not only closed the gap to McLaren this year, but also found a way to validate the tools and validate the way of looking at data and stuff like that. So I think it's even more significant than only this year's championship, even though I think Max would love to keep the number one on his car for one more season.
So you were on the ground in Qatar. Let's go back to the McLaren team. How did the atmosphere around the team and the drivers look to you throughout the weekend? Going into it after, you know, having sort of the unforced error, if you want, of getting the cars disqualified in Qatar. But then also, you know, they had to deliver solid points and not let Verstappen back in the game. So how did they seem? What was the body language like?
Well, I can only echo what Mark said before, that basically they shouldn't have ended up in this position anyway. And I think that's more than anything behind the pressure they feel now. Even going into the race on the starting grid, you could see that. Lando looked a bit more serious, you could also say a bit more nervous than normal, not smiling that much, not the kind of jokes that I'm used to see from him just before the race. And that's because everyone knew, even Zak Brown mentioned it on Saturday night, they knew Max would send it into turn one because Max simply had nothing to lose. So they were prepared for that. In the end, Max didn't even need to take crazy risk because on the better side of the starting grid, he had a good getaway and basically got the job done already before they got into turn one. But all those factors play into the McLaren minds, I think, and Max is trying to make that even worse by getting into mind games, and that's something he never did before, and that's something that really, I saw that really in the Qatar weekend, especially in the Dutch media session we had with him, because there were some questions on the comments he made earlier in the week that he said, "Well, if I would have been in the McLaren car, I would have wrapped up the title a long time ago," and then Lando replied by calling that utter nonsense. But then Max was asked again, and usually he would counter those questions and say, "Well, you shouldn't ask me because it has nothing to do with me and I'm not going to answer it." But this week, Max replies completely differently because he's taking every single opportunity to poke some more fun at McLaren, but especially to put more pressure on them. And that's really unlike the Max Verstappen we've seen in the last couple of years, But that's also completely normal, because back then he didn't even need it because he was relatively dominant. And now he knows that his only way to win the title is to force others into a mistake. And he's trying that on track, but also off track when he's talking to us. And yeah, so far that's working out pretty well. So he probably, from his perspective, he just needs one more. But yeah, from a psychological and mental point of view, it's really interesting. You see the effect it has on McLaren, and you see Max trying to make that effect stronger and stronger and stronger. And I guess we will see much more of that going into the Abu Dhabi weekend and probably on Media Day on Thursday.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting cameo. Max Verstappen giving an interview to Sky going into the weekend, saying that basically, you know, he didn't have the dominant car and the McLaren has been a dominant car, that he's only in the position he's in because of their mistakes, as we were talking about at the beginning, and because they haven't maximized everything. And that if he'd been driving that McLaren, he would have won the championship a long time ago. I mean, that comes across as quite arrogant on the one level, but the look in his eyes when he said it, the directness with which he said it, which, as you know, Ronald, is a very Dutch trait, isn't it, to be very direct and kind of plain speaking. But as you say, he was definitely working an angle there. He was kind of rubbing their noses in it. And I thought, Mark, that it was interesting at the end of the race, which was decided by a strategy call. Pretty much everybody, apart from McLaren, made the same call on lap 7 to bring their cars in behind the safety car for a tyre stop, because that was the beginning. That was the earliest window you could actually do that, and under the sort of regulations that were imposed for that weekend. McLaren didn't make that move. And so who did Red Bull send up onto the podium to collect the Constructors' Trophy but their chief strategist, Hannah Schmitz, who is a formidable strategist, and she's made many great and very aggressive decisions over the years, which have won Verstappen and Red Bull a lot of races. But I thought that was just world-class trolling, really, Mark. And when you're on the receiving end of that, does that count for anything? I mean, can you laugh that off as a McLaren engineer, mechanic, team manager, or does that get under your skin?
Well, all you can do is laugh it off. But the truth is, these things did get under the skin. And you know, my version of that was back in 2007, as you referenced earlier on. We had a sort of similar situation in many regards. And if I think back to Lewis Hamilton of that year, everybody will remember the moment in China when we really should have really capitalized and won the championship. And Lewis ended up in that silly little gravel trap in the pit lane. There were so many elements to that, but the larger one was that we took our eye off the big picture of winning the championship, and we focused intently on this internal battle of trying to beat just the guy on the other side of our own garage. And that, as I said, there were so many other parts to that season in itself, so there's a lot going on. But that's really the top line of what happened. And, you know, McLaren, and when that happens, of course, the world starts criticizing you from the outside, you know, and it was an error. Absolutely, we got that wrong as a team that day. Between driver and team, we messed it up. And it seriously contributed to us coming away with nothing at the end of that season. The media starts talking about that. The you know, you come home and everybody you bump into that you know starts talking about it. What on earth are you doing? That's all I've heard. I've been doing media interviews
School
yesterday.
School gates.
Exactly. It is. It's all of that stuff. And it was the same this weekend. Everybody I bumped into yesterday, what on earth are McLaren doing? If you're inside McLaren and that's happening, it's this constant barrage of questioning of your ability, you know, and of your sort of incompetence, which is how it's framed. And to some extent, that's what it was. So, yes, it gets under your skin to some extent, although the job of the team is to try and make sure that you do brush it off, that you move on quickly, you get to Abu Dhabi and you block all of that out, because now nothing else matters. This is the final race. We don't need to think too far ahead. It's all about the present and getting focused on that Abu Dhabi weekend. It's a one race weekend. Now, if you execute one race weekend in the best way you can, and McLaren have done that on many occasions this year, they'll win the race. They'll at least get the third place that they need to be able to seal the championship. So in some regards, it's a fairly straightforward challenge, straightforward task. And they've got all the tools they need to be able to do that. So the psychology part of it, the mentality, is probably the biggest risk for them, allowing that to get in and destabilize things. That's the job of Zach and Andrea and the entire team to make sure it doesn't happen.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Mark. So, okay, guys, so here we go. Picture the scene. It's the last lap of the Abu Dhabi Grand Prix. Max Verstappen leading. George Russell is second because Mercedes have been very quick in their qualifying recently. It's entirely plausible that Russell could find himself in second place. Piastri is third. and Lando Norris is fourth. So McLaren boss Andrea Stella comes on the radio, the team radio, and says, Oscar, we need you to let Lando through so a McLaren driver can win the world championship. You can't win it tonight, but Lando can. Please move over. What do we think happens next?
I mean, I think that's a very real possibility. And, you know, for all the sort of fairness strategy that McLaren have gone with this year, when it comes to the final race, and particularly that final lap, I think that goes out the window. And I think if they find themselves in that situation, they will ask. And I think Oscar would move over. And I think he's young in his career. He's got to think much bigger picture than this season. It's easy to think about this as being a one shot in a lifetime to win a world title. And it could well be for both of these guys. We move into a whole new rule set next year. The dominance McLaren have may disappear. Who knows? So this could be their shot. However, when we get to that stage, if that shot has gone for Oscar, I think he's a sensible enough guy. He's mature enough to know that he doesn't want to be remembered for the guy that prevented his teammate having a shot at a world title when he no longer could. So I think he's got that kind of head of it on his shoulders right now. Any earlier than that, and they've gone too far down a road where they can't favour one driver. They've gone down a path where equality has been their priority. It's cost them races, as we saw in Qatar. But when we get to that stage, if that scenario unfolds, I think it'll play out the way I just described.
Yeah, I think the same. And by the way, these are exactly the conversations that McLaren will have this week, because Andrea Stella had his post-race media session on Sunday. Of course, the majority of that was on the strategy blunder, as they even called it themselves. But then I asked Stella exactly about this. I said, okay, what's the approach going into Abu Dhabi? And he said, well, nothing changes, meaning that both drivers, as long as they can mathematically win it, will have all chances to go for it, which is not just the papaya rules, but also the only option, because they said in Qatar, Oscar deserved to win it. So it would be impossible to go to him after that race and say, we first screwed your strategy, and now you have to give up your own chances because we're choosing Lando. So going into the weekend, that's absolutely impossible. But Stella did say that this week, so basically these days that we are talking now, they will have conversations about all the scenarios that can come up during the race. And of course, this is one of it. I'm sure in those conversations, Oscar will say, yeah, I understand, and I will move out of the way. The question is what he will do on the final lap, knowing everything that has happened and probably sometimes not giving the support that he would have liked. But I do agree with Mark. I think, you know, Oscar, he's a really nice young man in every single possible way. And I think he's very smart. So he's also very smart in thinking longer picture. And the only, because I hear a lot of suggestions like, oh, Oscar, if he doesn't win the title, he should move. But no one is running away from the most competitive car. And that's the whole point, because next year Mercedes is predicted to have a good engine. McLaren has a phenomenal technical department. So I would definitely not bet against McLaren. And you would only risk something, and risk something really silly, if you've got a really, really competitive alternative. And that's not a given for 26. It might be a given for 27 if the driver market is completely open. But I think if Oscar knows, and I know emotions play a role, but just pure rationally, if he knows, okay, I'm out of this, and the team asked me to do it to keep peace in the team long term, I think it's still a really difficult call, but I think indeed Oscar will do it. But as I said, not going into the weekend, because they will give equal opportunities to both drivers.
What about this one, James? What about if early in the race they go for their first pit stop and Oscar's pit stop is bungled in some way? Given what happened earlier in the season, and they swap drivers to try and keep fairness, do you do that? Do you return that favour on championship deciding day? So these are kind of really interesting scenarios that McLaren have put themselves into a situation. We all understand why they've gone down this fairness route, and we can and on many levels, it's a great way to try and appease your two drivers. And going back to 2007, probably we could have learned a lot from that. But they've also put themselves in some really complicated situations. And that was one that keeps cropping up for me. If a pit stop goes wrong for one driver, we've seen them try and correct that on the racetrack before. Do you do that when a championship's literally on the line on the final day?
Well, and one thing to pick up on is that we shouldn't forget, because everyone says with these papaya rules, McLaren looks very silly. And at some point that has been the case, but we shouldn't forget that it started with the swap in Monza. And back then, after Zandvoort, Max was 104 points behind. So even though McLaren will never admit it on the record, and they always keep saying, oh, we always thought Max Verstappen would be a threat, etc., I'm pretty sure that internally they were 100% convinced that it would be just a title battle between the two McLaren drivers. And if that's your mindset, then I can understand why back then they wanted to keep everything fair and equal and not even thinking about Max Verstappen too much. The issue is, once you start doing it, there's no way back. And that's how they ended up in the situation they are in today. Partly because of Max and Red Bull pulling off a comeback that no one thought was possible, including the McLaren team management, I reckon.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that. And I think also Monza Piastri lost 3 points because the team messed up Norris's pit stop, which is not his fault. And he didn't think that that was one of the scenarios in which he would have to give a place back. So that obviously, it felt like that hadn't really been discussed. So he wasn't very happy about that. He lost another 3 points, you could argue, in Singapore at the start. Norris was a bit out of control and nerfed him out the way, basically, into the first sequence of corners. Piastri comes on the radio and says, hang on a second, you know, what's going on here? You know, are you going to let me, you're going to tell him to give me the place back? Or what are we doing here? Is this, and the FIA said no further action. So as far as they were concerned, as the governing body, as the regulator, you know, they didn't see that was a foul, if you like, by Norris. And Piastri thought, well, whatever they might think, what does the team think? The team felt the same way and didn't take any action. So he wasn't very happy about either of those two things, both of which cost him 3 points. That's 6 in total, and would put him in a much more, you know, controlling position if that hadn't happened. And obviously Norris would have lost places in both cases. So these fine margins, these moments through the year, they all contribute. Don't, it's like a patchwork. It builds up over time. And in terms of what Piastri would do, I agree with you both. I think he would let Norris through in that scenario that we painted earlier on. And that he would do it principally because of his own future. I think he wouldn't want to be a driver who you couldn't trust to play the team game. He wouldn't get signed by another team in the future if you were sort of seen to be like that. And I don't want to name any names, but I think we can all draw our conclusions about people whose careers perhaps haven't gone as well as they might have done because they've been perceived as not being a sort of team player. And I think you make a very good point, Ronald, that Piastri's going nowhere for 26, but at the end of 26, there's a real chance that there's an empty seat at Ferrari. There's a real chance there's an empty seat at Red Bull, if Verstappen decides that it is time to move on, go to Mercedes or Aston or wherever he decides he might go. It will be quite a fluid market, and I think Piastri, just generally speaking, the body language since that sort of Monza period has looked to me like someone who's not, you know, comfortable, and maybe next year he bounces back. Maybe next year McLaren has a good car again. He wins the world championship. But I thought it was extremely interesting. Nothing happens by accident in Formula One. And I thought it was extremely interesting that this morning, just a few days before the final race, McLaren announced that they've signed Leonardo Fornaroli, who is like Piastri, like Leclerc, a driver who won Formula 3 as a rookie, and then went straight on and won Formula 2 as a rookie, which is only special drivers do that. Fornaroli's kind of gone a little bit under the radar for a lot of people, but he's obviously a huge talent. And that says to me, first of all, it's a hedge against perhaps Piastri leaving at the end of 26. Fornaroli will obviously do a lot of Formula 1 mileage in a two-year-old car. He'll do. He may even run in Abu Dhabi in FP1 if they can get that sorted out, because Piastri, I think, has to give up his seat one more time this season. I'm not sure if you've got any information on that, Ronald, but that looks to me like a little bit of a hedge by McLaren, that they've got the kind of next cab off the rank ready to go. What do you think about that?
I agree. First, to pick up on one thing you said at the beginning, that Oscar would do it for his long-term future. And that relates to the beginning of this podcast, where we talked about Max Verstappen's mind games, because he is exactly playing with that. Because when we talked about it with Max, he said, yes. But at the same time, I think Oscar doesn't want to be labeled as a number two driver. So he's playing and he's spinning it around. And he said, well, I think Oscar doesn't want to be a number two. So that's why he has to stand his ground and not give up the position if they ask him. So that's, again, mind games playing a role there. But yeah, I agree. I think, I mean, it's a smart move. I'm surprised that no one else took Fornaroli, to be honest. Because if I would be Alpine, I would be really tempted to put him in that second seat. Especially as some Alpine team members set off the record, okay, Carlo Pinto is financially... interested in an interesting option, but he's probably not bringing in as much money as people think. And then you've tried Doohan, you've tried Colapinto, then I'd say go for Nairoli, who was still a free agent back then. I had the same conversations with Helmut Marko at Red Bull and saying, okay, why don't you take him for the Racing Bull seats? Because again, I rate him highly, so maybe even higher than Lindblad. But no one did. And then, yeah, McLaren had a great chance to sign him and at least have a backup plan, a plan B for if Piastri leaves at the end of 26. And I fully agree with you. He has gone massively under the radar for Nairoli, partly because insiders say, well, engines in Formula 2 are always quite difficult to judge. Invicta is one of the best, probably the best team to drive for. But still, it's not a coincidence to win F3 and F2 in your first year. So he's a special driver and he's a perfect backup plan for McLaren, I reckon.
You're listening to the James Allen on F1 podcast, part of the Autosport Podcast Network. For the latest from our reporters at the racetrack during F1 weekends, head to the Autosport F1 channel.
Think about the last time you had to cancel a subscription. There's probably some waiting on hold, some guessing at your password, some mind-numbing small talk. And maybe, after all of that, you still weren't able to cancel it. Good news, it doesn't have to be this way. Thanks to Rocket Money. Rocket Money tracks, manages, and can cancel your subscriptions for you. When you connect your accounts, you'll see a complete picture of all of your recurring subscriptions all in one place. Rocket Money organizes your subscriptions by due date and notifies you when something is coming up, so you'll never be caught off guard when you get charged. If you see a subscription you want to cancel, Rocket Money simplifies the process. Instead of waiting on hold for an hour, you can cancel it right from the app. Rocket Money will even try to get you a refund for the money you spent on subscriptions you forgot about. Stop wasting time trying to cancel subscriptions the hard way. Make your life easier and go to rocketmoney.com/cancel. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel or download the app from the Apple App or Google Play Stores.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
All right, well, let's get into the here and now and look ahead to this weekend. I'm coming out on Wednesday. I'm going to spend the whole weekend in Abu Dhabi. I'm really looking forward to it. I love the place. I love the way the racing starts as the light starts to fade and the lights come up. The atmosphere in the paddock is sensational. Everybody's there because it's the end of season. We're only a few weeks out from Christmas. And when you've got a three-way title fight to enjoy as well, I mean, it doesn't really get much better than that. So Verstappen needs Norris to finish off the podium. If he wins the race, he needs Norris to be off the podium. But if Verstappen finishes second, Norris has got to be lower than eighth. So, I mean, at the end of the day, in terms of who's going to be competitive through qualifying, set themselves up for a good grid slot, difficult place to overtake Abu Dhabi, relatively straightforward strategy-wise, although you do get the odd safety car. There's really going to be four or maybe five cars who are competitive, which is Verstappen, the two McLarens, and Russell, possibly Antonelli as well, who's finishing the season strongly. We talked about the scenario in which Russell gets himself in the mix. I do think that's quite plausible. He's got nothing to lose at the end of this season, and he's had clearly his best season in Formula One. His confidence will be sky high, I think. Piastri needs to win with Norris sixth or lower, because if Piastri finishes ahead of Verstappen, then that's Verstappen out of the game anyway. There are other less likely permutations available for that, but how do we both see this going, Mark? What's your feeling for the race and how it's going to play out?
Well, I think the real honest answer is I don't think anyone really knows, and that's what's so great about it. And I think things are so close right now and on a knife edge, and the fact that we've got to a knife edge, as we've said, is due to all of the circumstances we've covered a lot of already. It should never have got this far, which I think puts McLaren in a much more nervous position. I can tell you when things go down to the final day, if you've been in a position already to have sealed the title, and I've been there myself a number of times, you're constantly feeling like, is this ever going to happen? It only takes someone to tag you in turn one and you end up pointing the wrong way or in a barrier, which can happen at Abu Dhabi. And very quickly, you've gone from title favourite to completely out of the race. that's a real possibility. So when we went into Qatar and Norris had this wonderful opportunity to seal the championship on Sunday night, they all desperately wanted that to happen. Not because we know we've got another opportunity, but because that is the final opportunity. And that means nerves go through the roof at that stage. And, you know, for the mechanics, for the engineers, for the strategists, the people making those big calls, you're sitting there on that day with genuine nerves, which affect the way you think. You know, I can tell you from putting the car together and you're sitting on the grid, having sort of assembled this thing, you are questioning all the things you know you can easily do with your eyes shut, and you've done it for 23 other races this season. You start questioning, did I do that correctly? Did I do that right? Now, if you're in a position of making a strategic call, that same process is highly likely to happen. So the answer to your question is, I honestly don't know how this is going to go. McLaren, both McLarens have a car that probably will be dominant, but that was the case in Qatar, and look what happened. Verstappen kind of has nothing to lose here. So in the same way that we talked about Qatar, he'll have his elbows out. Same for someone like for Russell, wants to get in the mix, wants to finish the season strong. But the likes of Norris, who is the favourite, will have to be so careful and tiptoe around those first couple of corners. Well, as soon as you start doing that, which is different to the way you normally approach the start of a race, that's when mistakes start to creep in. Anything you do that's not your normal procedure, and this is what happens when you start thinking about the nerves and the magnitude of the situation you're in, anything you do that's not normal introduces the possibility of a mistake creeping in. So I'm up for it. I'm excited for it. I honestly don't know which way it's going to go.
Yeah, I think that's a perfect summary, to be honest, because if you look at Abu Dhabi as a track, has a little bit of everything. And if we look at the car, McLaren car has been by far the best all-rounder. So in terms of pure pace, if you look at it rationally, then they should have the pace to at least finish on the podium. So the only thing that could cost them a title is another mistake, whether that's driver perspective or operationally. But it's exactly what Mark says. I can only imagine being Lando Norris, waking up on a Sunday morning and thinking, okay, this has to be the day. I've got the car to do it, but I cannot make a single mistake. And then in the back of your mind, there's the idea, I should have wrapped up this title a long time ago if it didn't go wrong in Vegas, if it didn't go wrong in Qatar. So I think mentally, that's an incredibly tough position to be in. So if you just, if this would be race three or four, I would say, yeah, of course, McLaren is going to get an easy double podium. It's not even a question. But this being the last race makes everything completely different. And I think that's the whole point. Having said that, I think if you want to be world champion, if you're Lando Norris and if you want to be world champion, this is exactly the kind of pressure that you have to resist and that all the greats have resisted in the past, like Lewis, Max, and if we go back further, Senna, Prost, etc. So if you want to be a worthy world champion, I think these are the challenges that you have to deal with. But I mean, sitting in the podcast, that's much easier said than done, of course.
Yeah, it requires perfect execution of the kind we saw from Norris in Mexico and again in Brazil. It was disappointing from his point of view that in that final qualifying run in Qatar, he didn't hook it all up and finish the job off. He made a small mistake, had to abort the lap and didn't get the benefit. That basically set him up for the problems that then occurred during the race. So he can't afford to make that kind of mistake. I think what he will do is channel the kind of performance that he put in Mexico and Brazil. And we talked on last week's podcast about, I'm absolutely sure he's had a kind of mental reset in the last few months, possibly with some outside help to help him to sort of just understand what's going on inside his mind, the negative emotions, negative thoughts, whatever it may be, eradicate those, focus, etc. All the great sports science psychology stuff. And also channel what happened last year. Because last year, if you remember, Piastri got tagged at the start and exactly the scenario Mark was talking about. And it was all on Lando to win the race in order to get the points that McLaren needed to win their first constructors for decades. So Norris can channel what happened in Abu Dhabi last year, channel what he did in Brazil and Mexico. And I think that's kind of from his point of view, what he's got to do. For the other two, it's kind of slightly out of their hands. And the other interesting thing, Mark, is that we've been talking here about Verstappen over and over again, saying he's got nothing to lose. He's got nothing to lose. Throw it up the inside at the start. He's got nothing to lose. But now he has got something to lose this weekend.
Well, he has and he hasn't, because he's certainly not the favourite going into this. And he knows that realistically, he's got to win this race. So it's going to be all in to win. And I think that will come from Max in the way that he drives the car. It'll also come from Red Bull. They may well be willing to throw a sort of alternate strategy into the mix and do something different to the McLarens to try and give them some kind of offset. The chances are they may not have the pace that McLaren have on the racetrack. So they might, and this is what Red Bull have been very good at, doing something different to generate a result when perhaps their car doesn't necessarily justify it. I mean, the one thing I'd say is this is a racetrack that we think McLaren will be strong at. It's a track where McLaren will have dominance in terms of looking after their tyres. That was mitigated to some extent in Qatar because of that 25 lap limit that was imposed by Pirelli. They couldn't do any long stints, even if they wanted to, which is one of their real big strengths. But here they can if they need to. So they've got more options open to them. But I think they will be very wary of Max doing something different. And that could be a big lunge into turn one, or it could be Red Bull throwing something different from the pit wall. But that's what Red Bull have been extremely good at. So it never feels like a sort of fair fight. I mean, it's not that Red Bull are playing unfair, but Red Bull have got this unbelievable ability, the confidence. And like I said, right at the top of the show, it comes down a lot of this to confidence. Red Bull have got so much confidence, they are willing to do a complete alternate strategy or throw something weird into the mix, knowing that it's based on a lot of research, a lot of data, and their own confidence that they can execute it. So it's an intriguing one, and I honestly cannot wait for it because I don't know which way it's going to go.
Well, you've got a really excellent new book out called Pit Lane Lessons, which shows that you've drawn a lot of valuable lessons from your experience. It's a really novel idea. It's what F1 can teach you about life and about work. So I encourage everybody to go out and read it because it's a very different kind of book. And I'm always very interested in what you can take out of the encounters that you have and thinking, you know, how would Ron Dennis approach a problem like this, you know, in your everyday life and all that kind of thing. There's lots of that sort of stuff in there. But, you know, we talked at the beginning, Mark, about your time at McLaren in 2007 in particular, which is a very similar situation to the one McLaren have here today and again in 2008. But back to 07, take us back there. Paint a picture for us of the tension inside the McLaren team, you know, as you left the door open and Ferrari's Kimi Raikkonen came through to win the title. Or sort of Raikkonen role here would be the Verstappen role today. But paint the picture of like that sort of sinking feeling as well. And what was that like to live through?
It is really intense. And the sinking feeling, like I said, started before the final day because the opportunities you have to win gradually become fewer and fewer. At one point, it was pretty, you know, it seemed obvious. Lewis was going to win the title in 2007. We had such an advantage. We were the favourites. And you can look at McLaren today in a very similar way. And then as you get closer and closer to the end, you haven't taken advantage of those opportunities that came, which means the pressure feels like it ramps up. And then you get to the final day and still we had the chance to win the championship, and we should have done. And in that particular year, we had both drivers pretty much level on points, as you know. And it was it was a disaster is the only way I can describe it. But it wasn't just about our on-track performance that year. It was about the way we operated as a team. And that's what destroyed our opportunities that year. We had a great car. We had great drivers, lots of amazing people in the team. We didn't have the team operating at the highest level. And, you know, you just referenced the book there. The book takes an awful lot of learning from that year. Obviously, in Formula One terms, we took the learning from that year and we were able to put a lot of it into practice for the following year to win the World Championship. So I don't see it as a total loss. That was a lot gained from that disappointing 2007. But the book takes a lot of those learnings that we can translate into our own worlds or into the world of business, because operating as a team and getting every element of your operation at the very highest level is the only way you win a Formula One world title. You can't win a world title by having two out of three elements. You know, you've got to be very, very lucky for that to happen. And that's the situation that both, you know, if you look at Red Bull, they've got amazing driver, amazing team, probably didn't have the amazing car, like we said earlier on. So they had two out of three. McLaren have got the amazing car, amazing drivers. The team is operating at a very, very high level. If they win the championship and they've already taken the constructors, we'll do nothing but praise the way they've gone about these last few seasons to build what they've built. But if they don't win the title, we will all be questioning that one element, the teamwork side of things, the bits they got wrong from the pit wall, the mistakes that crept in, the mentality That's the one bit that you could argue has let them down. And I think if you go back to 07, it was very much the case for us. It was painful. It hurt an awful lot. It took a long time to get over it. But the process that followed it was a really intense, deep dive into what we got wrong. And that has to be a really honest review. And I cover all of that in the book. A really honest review of taking apart the mistakes we all made and then trying to find a strategy to put them all right, which we luckily did in 2008 and did win that title with Lewis.
And of course, what then happened, 2007 was Lewis Hamilton, the rookie, and the very experienced two-time world champion, Fernando Alonso, as teammates at McLaren. I don't think McLaren thought that Hamilton in his first season would be a title contender. They thought perhaps it was going to be, Alonso with Hamilton learning from him, and it was a great-looking combo. But of course, Hamilton, a seven-time world champion, one of the all-time greats, of course he stepped up in his first season. Of course it became a much more fierce competition, as it is today within McLaren. Alonso left after a very contentious 2007 season. And so in 2008, McLaren had Heikki Kovalainen, who was a nice guy and quite quick on his day, but there was no way he was going to threaten Hamilton for a driver's championship. And of course, even then, it still went down to the last day. And of course, a very, very hairy-scarum last lap in Brazil in 2008 for McLaren and Hamilton to win the championship. But it was at least they had a clear number one driver that season.
And that's an interesting take home from that. And I cover all of that in a lot of detail in the book. But that's interesting, is it? McLaren never have, as famously now and very relevant today, they've never had the policy of choosing a number one or a number two. And it's very rare that you get a situation in any team where the championship is decided by the two drivers in that same team. Whenever it does, history tells you it ends in tears. That was the case with us with Lewis and Alonso. It's been the case with Senna and Prost, Lewis and Nico Rosberg at times, Mansell, Piquet. So the far better situation for a team, the easier situation, is the one we had in 2008, where naturally you end up with a number one and a number two. I can think of Mika and David Coulthard with us at McLaren as well. Same kind of thing. It just naturally went that way. There was never a decision to say you're a number two, but the results dictated that. McLaren have got that really difficult situation this year where both drivers are as level, are as good as each other at different times of the season. And it makes it a very, very difficult thing to manage. I actually refer to it in the book as a parent trying to manage twins. You know, you've got two kids who you can't choose a favorite. And it's very, very difficult sometimes when they both want the same thing and there's only one of them, they can't both have it. How do you cope with that as a parent? That's the situation that McLaren are in right now.
Well, that brings us very nicely to the final topic, Ronald. We talk about the most one-sided team where there's a lead driver and the other driver can't get close, Red Bull Racing. Today, Red Bull announcing its drivers for both teams across Red Bull Racing and Racing Bulls. Let us know what their decision is. Who's the next lamb to the slaughter as Verstappen's teammate then?
Yeah, I think everyone already knows that's going to be Isaac Hadjar. He will be promoted to Red Bull Racing, and then Lindblad will be promoted to F1 together with Liam Lawson at the Racing Bulls teams. But yeah, the main thing is Hadjar stepping up. I think it's a logical thing to do, having tried both Lawson. I still think he got aged way too early. It's ridiculous to give someone only two races and then replace him. So that remains something, yeah, that cannot be explained. Especially the way in which they did it, because last winter they said, oh yeah, Yuki's technical feedback is not so great. And then after China, they said, oh, we need Yuki in the team because his technical feedback is important. Well, his technical feedback did not change within a couple of months. So that rationale behind it is still a very interesting one. Anyway, having tried both and not really worked out, I think it makes sense to promote Hadjar, especially after the season he had. Personally, but that is just my idea, I don't think it will change much. Isaac himself, talking to him the last couple of weeks, he's really, really confident. And he thinks the 2026 regulations will provide him with a great opportunity. Because he said, said it in Monza or Singapore, one of those two. He said, all the issues we talk about now with the second Red Bull car, they will not exist anymore next year because it's such a reset and it's new for everyone. I'd say that's probably a bit too optimistic because you still have to fight Max Verstappen in equal machinery and you get into a team. I'm not going to say that it's a team built around Max, but it's at least a team that Max knows for a long, long, long time. And that whole how it operates together is really, really difficult to come in as a rookie. I mean, he's not a rookie next year anymore, but as an inexperienced driver to come in to the second seat and to compete with Max Verstappen on such a high level. So I think it will be a massive challenge. I mean, Isaac is optimistic, as he should be. And then interesting, I think, for the Racing Bulls, they wanted at least one more experienced driver. And having a rookie next to him, Arvid Lindblad, they've invested heavily in him, also with the TPC program. So he will get the step up. Interesting bit is that they're still talking to Honda about a TPC deal, which might be, that's the only thing we don't know yet, might be a lifeline for Yuki as a reserve driver, and maybe also a TPC program for him. The interesting bit is that, of course, Red Bull will compete next year with their own power unit, but for the TPC program, they still need the Honda engines. The FIA came up with a new rule, basically making it mandatory for the power units manufacturers to still supply their old customers, but there is no cost limit, so basically they can ask whatever they want. And that's where Honda and Red Bull have been negotiating about for a couple of weeks now, and that's where Yuki might play a role in it. But yeah, it will not save his F1 seat. He already hinted on that in Qatar, saying, well, I know something, but I cannot say it yet. A bit later today, after this recording, he can say it, because then the whole world will know it.
Yeah, and for those of you not familiar with Arvid Lindblad, despite his name, he is in fact British, and he was a former finalist of the Autosport BRDC Young Driver of the Year Award as well, as was Behrmann, and in fact, all of the British drivers in Formula One, apart from Lewis Hamilton, who back in his early days wasn't allowed by Ron Dennis to enter the competition, because in those days it was sponsored by McLaren. So once again, the Autosport Young Driver program brings through another driver to Formula One, which is great news. And that's a great point for us to finish. So I'm on my way out there to join you, Ronald. I can't wait. Get the champagne on ice. No, I'm kidding. I will. I'll look forward to seeing you for a cup of coffee in the paddock. And my thanks to Ronald and to Mark. Check out Mark's new book, Pit Lane Lessons, What F1 Can Teach You About Life and Work. I really do recommend it. It's a great read. And you can read all of Ronald's latest news and insights from Abu Dhabi this weekend, along with his colleagues on the Autosport and Motorsport channels. Thanks to producer Jason. And thanks to you all for listening. Please click to follow or subscribe. Leave us a review and a rating, and tell all your F1 mad friends about us. We'll be back with another exciting podcast, I hope, with a championship conclusion very soon.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com, and live the Chumba life.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.